This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're tuned in to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me in the studio today is Kevin Tok, Executive Director of Aggregate Asset Management. Good morning, Kevin, and welcome to the program.
Hi, good morning.
Kevin, I understand that Aggregate Asset Management is a champion of the 5% retirement rule. First things first, what is this 5% retirement rule?
Generally speaking, when a person has accumulated enough savings at his retirement age, he will like to start calculating how much he can afford to spend a year, such that he will never outlive his money. So, as a rule of thumb, there are enough literature out there that says that a person can afford to actually put aside, spend about 3 to 4% of their savings every year with a high, such that he's unlikely to outlive his money. It's not something new. It's just that in this part of the world, not many people talk about using this approach to fund their retirement. Just for example, can this really work? For example, let's say we talk about in 1985, someone who retired in 1985, and assuming he has $1 million accumulated in 1985, and he start practicing the 5% withdrawal rates, from then to now, it's about 34 years. Mm-hmm. He would have withdrawn $50,000 a year, and over the years from then to now, he has withdrawn about $2.4 million to spend. His account value today will still be about $2.9 million for him to pass on to the kids. So the principle is quite simple. If you can accumulate your savings and let it grow, this $1 million, into a financial instrument or into a portfolio that's growing at, let's say, 8%, 10%, you can afford to actually withdraw out 4-5% to spend. So why in aggregate we advocate a lot of more on 5% withdrawal rate? Because we believe if you can actually practice deep value investing, you can add another about 3% above the index returns in the stock market. And generally, you can actually get a 10% returns on your portfolio. And every year, you just take out 5%, half of it to spend.
Right.
And you will still pass on a very good estate for your next generation.
But generally speaking, you know, we are seeing people live longer, right? So how feasible or how long will that 5% actually last us? Is it 20, 30 years? Is that okay?
Yeah, the traditional way of financial planning is such that you start to plan at a retirement age of, let's say, 60, and you start assuming that your mortality age is until age 85, and you will calculate that you need enough money to spend for 25 years. But unfortunately, because with the advances in medical science, people are beginning to live longer. And probably for a younger generation in the market these days, there's a high possibility of them living up to 90 plus, 100, even beyond 100. Mm. So the question now is, at a retirement age of 60, 65 to about 100, they have 30, 40 years to spend their money. So the withdrawal rate approach that we talk about here is a better way for a person to actually ensure that they can sustain their living, no matter how long they live.
So given that, as you said, the estimate retirement span, so to speak, could last upwards of 25 years, does that 5% remain constant then? Because I would think that with inflation, that could significantly shift that 5% amount, correct?
Yeah. Of course, we take into account inflation. So say, for example, we start off with $1 million, and this person estimated that his retirement lifestyle is $50,000 a year. So he's at the end of next year, at the end of first year, he will adjust the withdrawal rate by another inflation rate of, let's say, 2%. So the second year, he will not be withdrawing $50,000. He'll be withdrawing $50,000 plus 2%. So inflation is accounted for.
Also keeping in mind that perhaps one shouldn't be lulled into this idea that retirement savings is all that they need to sufficiently fund every expense during their retirement years, right? It is perhaps one of several financial tools available. So I'm thinking making sure that you've got enough insurance coverage as well. What are some of the other tools that can complement someone financially during their retirement years?
Generally, I think we advocate that the client should look at their saving as a portfolio. Their portfolio might comprise of different things, insurance policies, bonds, stocks, but there's something...
Properties.
Yeah, properties, a mixture of things. But there's something that a person might want to be careful about. In our terms, we always like to call, even in Singapore, we have our clients, most of them make this mistake of having a portfolio of rojak. We call it rojak portfolio. And if you sit down and have a chat with them and ask them what is your returns per annum on their portfolio, the answer we generally get from our clients is, I don't know. They only know their stocks return is X percent. They only know their bond return is X percent. But you ask them to track their portfolio as a whole, not many people actually track their portfolio returns over long term. And if you actually force them to think carefully and really sit down and track their portfolio long-term returns, maybe you have a mixture of bonds at 4%, 5%, you have fixed D at 1%, 1% in Singapore, you have equity maybe at 5%, you have unit trust, some losing, you have some private equity or loan, some investment in friends' business. So as a portfolio, it cancels out, and their long-term return in Singapore, most of them have about 3-4%. And if your portfolio of, let's say, this 1 million is growing at 3-4%, it's hard for a person to practice the withdrawal rate system of 4%.
Much less beat inflation, 3-4%.
Yeah. So the question now is, your portfolio must be able to grow at 8% to 10% such that you can actually practice the 4-5% withdrawal rate.
Mm. Yeah. So if, let's say, someone's portfolio, like you said, is a rojak portfolio and not generating the kind of returns that could justify that 5% withdrawal retirement rule. So if that's the case, and let's say they are in their retirement years right now, they have less of a runway to continue investing or chasing that compound interest, right?
Yeah.
So what would be the recommended withdrawal rate then? Obviously less than 5%, but what would be the recommended rate? Like, can people survive on 1% withdrawal rate?
Like I say, depending on your lifestyle. So first of all, a person must determine what's their retirement lifestyle, because some people can live on 1%.
That's right.
And depending on what's your portfolio size. The lucky thing for the younger audience you have is that time is their best friend, and they can actually make full use of compound interest. So maybe I can cover a little bit about this thing called Rule of 72. The Rule of 72 is actually a concept that I hope more people can actually embrace. It basically says, how long does it take to double your money? You take your rate of returns, 72 divided by the rate of returns of your portfolio. Let's say your portfolio is growing at 3% per annum. To double your money, you take 72 divided by 3, which is 24 years. If your portfolio is growing at 10% per year, your portfolio will double. 1 million will become 2 million in 72 divided by 10, which is 7.2 years. So the good news is, if someone who is 40 years old, who doesn't have 1 million today, he has time to compound. So if he have 500,000 today and he give himself a 10 years period, and if portfolio growing at 7%, when he's 50, he will have 1 million.
That's right.
Yeah. And better still, if he have a 14 years period or he have a 20 years period, his portfolio will be triple. So Rule of 72 is one concept that is actually quite well covered in all the literature. But many people fail to see the doubling effect of compound interest. The doubling effect of compound interest is this. If you have $1 today, to double it, it grows to $2. From $2, when you double it, it becomes $4. 4 become 8. 8 becomes 16. So the question is, how many cycles does a person have? I'm 50 years old today, and I don't have that many cycles to go. So probably for me, I have 2 or 3 cycles to go. So if, let's say, my portfolio is growing at 10% per annum, I know I'll double my money every 7 years, 7.2 years. So if I got 3 cycles, at 50 years old to times 3, I have to at 71. Every $1 million I have today will be $4 million.
Well, Kevin, and what I can say is that obviously with the medical advances out there in the world today, I'm sure you've got more cycles than you think there, Kevin. So don't you worry about that. Right. Kevin, we've got to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll further explore this 5% retirement rule. This is Ringgit & Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Tan Chung Han. Stay tuned right here to BFM 89.9.
Ringgit & Sense on BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Thanks for staying with us here on Ringgit and Cents, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me in the studio is Kevin Tok, Executive Director of Aggregate Asset Management, which is a fund that is a champion of the 5% retirement rule. Now, Kevin, in the first half, you spoke about that 5% retirement rule. The main lesson from the first half was that you try to invest as early as possible so that you can take advantage of the compounding interest, employ the rule of 72, and hopefully give you enough of a retirement fund size whereby you can employ that 5% retirement rule. So draw down 5% or so every year, correct?
Yep.
Yep. So now in this second half, let's talk about some strategies that you can employ to accumulate that wealth, accumulate that retirement fund.
Yeah. Maybe I would like to touch on this thing, this topic called asset allocation. In the traditional financial planning world, people will advocate that actually when you're young, you can afford to take more risks. Maybe you can put 70% of money in equity, 30% in bonds. Mm. So 70-30 rules and young. And as you grow older, you should shift. Your asset allocation should be more bonds because you can't afford to take more risks when you're older. So the traditional teaching is actually as you move older, maybe it should be reversed, 30% in equity, 70% in bonds, mm-hmm. which we felt that this has this need to be corrected.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Because we have heard that 70-30 rule or becoming more risk-averse as you get older, that has been espoused by many of our guests here on this program, but you're saying that's a misconception.
I think for some people it applies. If an individual has already accumulated enough money, he can afford not to take any more risk. He can actually even put his money all into bonds and he start doing a drawdown rate of 1%
okay.
or 2% to spend. And that's enough to sustain his lifestyle. But unfortunately, for majority of the people, although we know that we should start saving early, but many people have not done it. And many people have not saved enough for their retirement. So imagine if you don't have enough money to... Let's say you're approaching 50 years old or 60 years old and you start doing that asset allocation, your whole portfolio returns will become, let's say it's 70-80% into bonds and only 20-30% into equity, your portfolio returns will probably be in the range of 4-5%.
Mm.
And if, like mentioned in the first half, we say if your portfolio return is 4-5%, you can't practice a 4-5% withdrawal rate. Mm. You will outlive your money. So for most people, I think that concept doesn't apply. So we would say even as you grow older, you can still consider equity, but provided your equity style of investing is a safe style.
Okay, and what do you mean by a safe style of equity investing? Because from what we understand, broadly speaking, investing in equities employs more risk as opposed to FDs or bonds, correct?
Sure. So
what's safe?
Most people take the equity market as a gambling ground where they can gamble their money and hope for good returns. But if your equity investment time horizon is mid to long term and you invest in solid companies, in aggregate, we actually practice deep value investing. We only invest in company that is actually trading at huge discount to their net tangible assets. Take for example, right now, our portfolio has 600 companies. The portfolio metrics is such that our assets is bought at 50% discount to net tangible assets. Not even book value, it's net tangible assets. Mm-hmm. And these are undervalued company that is going through industry down cycle, going through temporary problems, and they have good track record. So we'll buy them and we are prepared to hold them for a few years to wait for the next cycle. So we don't chase stock as it's on its way up. Mm. We also don't chase growth stock because growth stock, you are paying a huge PE for it because of the high potential growth. Mm-hmm. The minute they have some problem, the stock price will drop a lot. In Asia, even in whatever market, there's always opportunity out there. If you do some homework, there are always undervalued company out there that you can buy a huge discount with a margin of safety.
Mm. Now, what has been your success rate, though, when it comes to this value investing?
So as a portfolio, like I say, we look at stock as a portfolio. For aggregate value funds that we manage, we have been around for 5 years plus. Without taking into account this year have not ended yet. From our inception of 2012 for the last 5 years, we actually done a compound annual growth rate of about 10% per annum, practicing deep value investing. This year is not such a good year. This year is a negative year for us. So if you consider this year, taking into account this year, we are still compounding annual growth rate of about 8%.
But then here's the thing, though. Since 2012, you haven't really seen a bear market yet, though, right? So how waterproof is that 10% that you claim to have?
I think stock market, if you look at it, there's a cycle. I mean, the last 5-6 years, Asia equity market has not been doing well. The US market has actually grown quite a lot. The Asia stock market has not done well. Yet value investing can still deliver about 8-10% for deep value managers.
Right. So are you possibly shortchanging some of your clients then? Because like you mentioned, the US stock market last year certainly was just on this tear, right? And like you rightly pointed out, this year it has faltered quite a bit. So by confining your portfolio to just the 600 companies in Asia alone, I believe 10 countries including Japan, are you then perhaps missing out on some sectors of growth in Europe or the US?
I think, like I say, if you run we have a very strict process when we select our stocks. So we have a scoring model. If you run out based on our scoring model and try to apply those factors to identify stocks in US to pick now, you'll probably not be able to find many counters to invest in because US stock market have run up so much. In Asia, you still get to buy stocks at 50% discount to the net tangible assets.
So if let's say someone's about to retire, right, and they still employ that overweight stance in equities, right, they invest heavily in equities, but then there's a massive market correction. What kind of buffers or what kind of safeguards do you have for these kind of clients who are, again, perhaps contemplating retirement in the near future, in the next couple of years, let's say?
Yeah, so we believe that you have to have patience. Once you understand and based on the past history and you backtest it, you know that if a person who practices a withdrawal rate and do not panic during a crisis and cash out everything, because there's a difference between temporary loss and permanent loss. If you don't cash out anything, you have not lost anything yet.
It's just on paper.
It's just a paper loss and the market will come back. So if you backtest this withdrawal rate system over the last 7 financial crises that we have in Asia, chances of a person's portfolio dropping to zero and he outlive his money is very low. So you just have to have this belief that the world GDP will continue to grow if it has done so the last many, many years. And in whatever market, all of us go to work every day. We are all contributing to the economy. Companies are still growing. Revenue are still growing. Retained earnings of a company is still there.
And hopefully those assumptions hold true that you mentioned, right? That we still have a job and that the world economy still keeps chugging along. Now, I also want to get your thoughts on the concept of retirement, right? Whether or not that will hold true, several decades from now, because what we're seeing right now is that there's a tremendous amount of disruption in the job market, right? And earlier you mentioned one of the assumptions is that, this individual will have the job security and can keep contributing to that pot. But is retirement something that, realistically speaking, the 20-year-olds, the millennials can still strive towards? Or is it a case that some doomsdayers say, we're just going to have to work till we die?
I think most people, even in Singapore, they have not sat down and think through carefully. And they always worry that they don't have enough money for retirement and therefore they continue to work harder. And they take more risk in their investment. They end up buying Bitcoin, hoping for some big money.
Yeah.
They end up taking huge risks, some to casino. And once they understand that actually with proper planning, they should have enough if they actually don't do some reasonable savings. Back to the example, for someone to accumulate $1 million, if he's young, it's not that tough because time is on his side. You let compound interest be your best friend, you work for you. So if a person have take for example, if a person have 100,000 today, if he's still young, he have, let's assuming he can compound his money at 8 to 10%. If he have enough time, his 100,000 will be 800,000. It's possible without taking a lot of risk.
Right. Obviously, the question then is how far that 800,000 will go, say, 30, 40, 50 years from now, right? With the little time that we have left here, Kevin, talk to us about perhaps any perceived differences between the financial literacy among Singaporeans and Malaysians. Are there different focuses? Are there different habits? Or are they pretty similar?
I personally would think that it's similar. We are still human. So we all make the same mistake. I think in the investment world, we always say the biggest enemy is actually not the market. The biggest enemy is actually yourself, is your response. A lot of behavioral finance involved. Take, for example, Peter Lynch. Peter Lynch runs Fidelity Investment. He's a top fund manager. His fund, Magellan Fund, over a 13-year period from 1977 to 1990, did a 29% compound annual growth rate.
Wow.
That's amazing returns. He became a superstar fund manager. And Peter Lynch is the author of this book called One Up on Wall Street. It's a very good read. He himself did a research on his client base. Despite the fund performing at 25% over that 13-year period, the average investor in his fund actually end up losing money.
Wow, how come?
Because this is behavioral finance. Investors will come in, will chase. When the stock market, the price of their fund is at the high, they start buying. When it come down, they panic, they start selling. They don't have the confidence of the long-term market performance. And I think investors are always their own worst enemy.
Right. So hopefully those listening right now can overcome those fears and actually start immediately to prepare themselves for retirement. Well, Kevin, that's all the time that we have today. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us. That was Kevin Tok, Executive Director for Aggregate Asset Management, which is a fund that champions the 5% withdrawal retirement rule. This is Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Tan Chung Han. Stay tuned because we've got the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up, and then after that, Enterprise, right here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.